When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Drama,
fashion,
podcast, and who are we?
That's one secret we'll never tell.
XOXO,
Girls Room.
Hey up, Reesiders, Girls Room here, the one and only podcast about the scandalous lives of Manhattan's elite. I'm Julia Gray. I have my co-host with me, Drew Haskins.
Hello, hello, hello. I did Fat Albert again by accident. Oops. Okay.
We're still working on it.
Yep.
We have honestly the perfect guest for this perfect podcast, fashion freelance writer and editor / Gossip Girl expert, and Gossip Girl fashion expert. Welcome, Tyler McCall. How you doing?
Hi. Oh my gosh, I love that intro. I'm good. How are you guys?
We're thrilled to have you.
So thrilled. I was just saying before we started recording how I've been following Tyler for a while, and just the fashion content. She's doing a big service to us all, listeners, by chronicling the outfits on Gossip Girl and giving the details.
Trying. Yeah.
I mean, it's such an important show, important work within the show as well. Like, more so than most shows of the era. I mean, honestly, this Sex and the City and Girls form a nice trifecta in terms of costuming as storytelling.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, and there's surprisingly little online about, like, outfit credits. We do a segment every week where we go through our favorite outfits. And
yeah.
Of the outfits, I'm like, I have no idea. Like, no one has credited the designer or
especially where. Early seasons, it's actually a total night. Like, when I do those posts, early seasons, a lot of it is just me remembering, like, oh, that was like Mark by Marc Jacobs or whatever. And the amount of intense Googling that I end up having to do, it's truly a nightmare.
Like, do you have to reverse image Google search?
Yeah. Yeah, reverse image Google search a lot, Pinterest, which leads to a lot of dead links from, like, very old celebrity, like, fashion websites or, like, shopyourtv.com or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
Shopyourtv.com.
Yeah, that's a big one. Or, like, defunct Tumblr accounts, RIP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot of sleuthing.
Well, there's a hole in the market for the work you're doing. You're filling it.
I'm trying.
So beyond your chronicling of the fashion of Gossip Girl, what's your relationship with the show?
Yeah, so Gossip Girl came out when I was in college, and which I'm, like, really dating myself on that. And it was the first thing I remember. I'm, like, constantly, like, really late on pop culture stuff. This is kind of the ongoing joke with my friends in my life, but this I was on time for, and this I was, like, obsessed with. I was like, okay, every week at Wednesday at 8 p.m. or whatever, like, this is what I'm doing, is watching Gossip Girl. I went to the University of Florida, so I lived in Gainesville, Florida, not known as a hotbed of fashion necessarily, but I was still going out to, like, Grog House or, like, Balls, which was the name of a bar, in my little Blair Waldorf headbands and, like, tights in Florida, which made no sense. So yeah, I was just really obsessed. I stuck with it through till the end. Like, I was like, I'm watching, I'm committed, I'm in, these are my friends. I need to know how their lives are going to end. And then just kind of, I mean, it's been, like, my favorite show forever, which is really funny because I actually couldn't tell you why I got attached to it. I remember reading the books in high school, but, like, not being particularly obsessed with them. And I did not watch I still haven't seen all of the OC, which is, like, don't tell anybody except for everybody that's listening to this podcast. I was a youth group kid when the OC was airing, and it wasn't very Christian of a television program. So it missed me, or I missed it. So, but Gossip Girl really hit, and it's still hitting.
I was just going to say, there's something so special about Gossip Girl that I'm remembering as I'm rewatching it for time or whatever. Like, I don't know what it is. It's hard to describe. It's just the perfect kind of piece of pop culture candy. It's like a cult soap opera. It's so good.
It is.
So I was in youth group during Gossip Girl, and I remember how scandalized our youth group leaders would be while we were talking about what was going on the show every week.
Like, and you were still watching it?
Oh yeah, no, I was. We were scandalous. In what, late middle school, high school, I guess, when the show came out. Yeah, and it was like someone's dad. Like someone's dad was just so shocked we were watching this show that if you had only seen the ads, that were running in like People magazine back in the time, like yeah, you'd think the show was like what we think Euphoria is now. But
I mean, it practically was.
Yeah.
Here's the thing is, like, parents are just not built for it. I don't know if you guys ever watched Skins, the UK teen show that was, Skins was like the crazy shit. Like, Skins was like actual, this was child's play compared to that. So it's why, like, now everyone's so scandalized that, like, teens are watching Euphoria. And I was like, I was in the weeds on Skins. So,
100%. Like, actually going back and rewatching most of season one, it kind of kicks into gear towards the middle, but the first few episodes are pretty tame by and large.
Yeah, compared to like anything happening. But you know, cable television was still a thing, and I guess like TV shows for teens were still a thing. We weren't quite in the Riverdale jingle jangle of it all, or whatever it's called, that drug.
Yeah, I feel like maybe people just don't like that Euphoria feels grittier, you know, that there's kind of a glossiness about Gossip Girl that makes it go down easier, maybe.
For as fashion heavy as Euphoria is, there's no real glamour to it, which I guess was the point, but it doesn't make it a fun watch. Like Gossip Girl is just, it's so fun to watch.
It is.
In particular, the visual language of this goddamn episode, the sleepover, the way I wanted to be at that sleepover.
Mm-hmm.
So good. I still want to be at that. I still want to
I want to throw that in my apartment that won't fit that many.
Wouldn't fit half of them.
Speaking of how few beds our apartments would fit, how do you think the show holds up after watching this episode in the year 2024?
I think for the most part, it still really holds up. Right. Like, I think that there's a reason I was really fascinated to see once the show hit Netflix in particular, I think maybe like right before the pandemic and then during the pandemic, kind of it find a new audience with teenagers and like Gen Zers and I don't know where we're at, Alpha. Actually, they're probably too young to be watched. I hope they're not watching Gossip Girl because I think they're like 10. But, you know, I think that it still finds an audience because for the most part, it didn't age. Sometimes I'm watching and I'm like, that joke aged very poorly. But like, I guess like I have a high tolerance for that because I know at the time that was fine, you know. The fashion, like, it's definitely of its time, but it doesn't look like, it does remind me of Sex and the City in that way, and that I'll be watching Sex and the City and I'm like, that feels very of its time, but it still looks great. Like, there's something about it that looks cheesy or super dated or whatever, in a way that like 902, like Beverly Hills 90210 probably doesn't have that same vibe, you know.
That show looks like it was shot on a PowerPoint. Like, you go back and watch old clips of that show, and it's insane that it passed the professionalism test and the acting too, like, just Annalyn McCord aside, like,
yeah, it's really crazy. They were doing the reboot. I didn't even watch the reboot.
Oh my god, no, I was talking about the CW,
the CW show. I think I watched a couple episodes of it and I was like, this is not for me. I think what Gossip Girl also does really nicely is it doesn't feel like television for teenagers. Yeah. It is television for teenagers, obviously, but something about it really escapes that kind of feel. Like, it feels more universal, which is an insane thing to say about the show, but it feels more universal than like some of the other teen television shows that were on.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like I don't feel so silly watching it.
No,
a woman.
Yeah.
It also definitely has clean archetypes too. Like, even if you haven't watched the show, you know who Blair is and what Blair is and who Serena is and what Serena is. Like, I think it's kind of transcended the show itself in that way. And the same way that, like, Sex and the City has, like, you're a Charlotte, you're a Carrie. It makes it feel a little bit more universal in that way because people use it just as a shorthand for things.
And I think shooting in New York too, probably is something, because I think when you shoot in New York and you're shooting on, like, real locations and it's not a set also, it's probably really helpful for making things. I mean, obviously some of them are sets, but making it look and feel more real, I think, is always helpful.
100%.
I'm a noted expert on making television, so, you know, that's my opinion on that.
Love it.
Which, speaking of archetypes, we're just killing it with the segues. Which Gossip Girl are you? I know you're, I have a guess, but.
And your guess is almost definitely right, because I'm definitely a Blair. Like, it's like, I'm not cool enough to be, like, I think that's part of why I immediately, like, clung to Blair. Like a barnacle is like, I don't find that quality of, like, Serena just gets everything very easily. Like, that's not me at all. Right. I'm not somebody who, like, walks into a room and everyone's like, who's that girl? Like, whatever. And very few people really are, I suppose. But I am the type A perfectionist, like, control freak. And I was like, oh, it's me. Minus several million dollars and, like, wardrobe and things like that, but, you know, yeah, I'm definitely, what are you guys?
I'm a Blair too, for many of the same reasons. I love Blair. I also just think Chuck said in a recent episode, you don't get nearly enough credit for your wit,
and yeah,
she is funny.
She's so funny.
She's a little genius. I love her. She's evil, but, like, with a good heart.
I think that she's this is the hill that I will die on, is that obviously, like, the first season really centers around Serena. And then I think that they figured out very quickly, both because of Blair as a character and also because I think Leighton is such an incredible actor, that she was kind of the heart of the show. And they kind of readjust around that. But yeah, she gets the best lines. Like, I think Blair gets the best lines in any episode. So wait, Drew, which are you?
So I am Serena, though I've been sort of second guessing that assumption on this particular rewatch. I do see a little bit more Blair in me now, but Serena historically has been really the one that, like, stands out to me, is because she has this sort of, like, earthy, like, spaced out quality that I feel like I do have a lot. It's not really more than that. It's just, like, we see each other. She does not see me at all, but Blair's kind of scrappiness is really standing out to me on this rewatch, though, and I don't know, I like that a lot. I would not say I'm cuspy yet, but ask me in, like, 6 or 7
you're getting there.
Episodes,
okay,
I might have a different answer.
I think also the fact that you're not, I so don't like Serena, and your kind of empathy for her, or your, the fact that you feel kind feelings towards her, I think means you're a Serena.
It's like a sisterhood of tolerance.
I don't know. I find her so, I don't know. That girl, she really thinks she can get away with murder.
And she literally can.
I was just going to say.
She literally can, is the thing.
My God. I cannot wait for that episode. Oh, do you?
It's, like, my favorite. I've said before, I realize that this is getting ahead of both ourselves and this entire podcast. But that moment, I wish that I could experience it for the first time again. Oh, it is, like, it is the most, the way, it's up there for me with, like, I mean this very sincerely, the Connor's wedding episode of Succession. Yeah. It truly is that level for me where I'm like, I wish I could watch that for the first time again.
I was holding up my arm to show goosebumps, which I don't think you can see, but literally talking about that final beat of that episode.
It's
I killed someone, and then the music
comes in. Oh,
literally,
my God.
Like chills.
It's perfect. Anyway, I realize that's like several episodes off. But
we've perfect. Touched on this in a previous episode briefly, like what we're doing now. But just because it is so, you can't do that. The week between those two episodes was
longest week of my life.
Oh yeah,
by a long shot.
Wow. I mean. God damn. Yeah, we can't get too ahead of ourselves. I cannot. Yeah. Maybe you'll have to come on for that episode.
Yeah.
Is that this season or next?
Yeah, it's season one episode. So shit. I should know this. 17?
Oh.
17.
Oh, wow. You really do have like everything 16. On lock. Thank you.
I have an illness. Like it is. I could learn to do my own taxes with the brain space. I was at a friend's, a bunch of us were at on a cabin trip, and my friend had on a very random playlist. And this song came on and I was like, I know this song. It was on the Gossip Girl soundtrack. And then I narrowed down what episode and what scene it was in. And I can't do that for every song on the set, but it was like, they were are you okay? And I was like, no, I could do advanced calculus with the brain space that I dedicated to the show.
That's perfect.
It's my niche interest.
I knew we'd have to have you on the show. I mean, and another question I think I know the answer to. Who is your Gossip Girl fashion icon?
It's still Blair. Yeah.
Okay. Had to ask.
It's delightful and devastating to have like hair accessories in general and hair bows make such a big comeback, because I've been riding that train since 2007. Like, I don't think I ever really gave that up, in spite of the fact that it was very not cool. And then it became very cool. And I have never, in the past working in fashion, I've never really understood why people get annoyed when things become trendy. I'm like, isn't that good for you? Like, you can buy it anywhere. And then last December, my brother and his wife were in town and we went to see the Nutcracker, and every other bitch there was dressed just like me. And I was like, this is the worst thing to ever happen to me in my life. It was, and that's very dramatic. I've had COVID. It's like, it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the worst thing that's happened to me in my life. But I was so mad because it was every girl there in like some variation of like a festive dress with like a hair bow. And I was like, first of all, half of you aren't even doing it right. Like, I had a lot of notes. I was like, I don't feel special anymore. And that's a problem for me because I'm a Leo. Like, there's just a lot going on.
Here's what I'll say. As a girl, I feel your pain so much in a way where I'm so committed to headbands and have been for so long. As a girl who loves cheetah print, fuchsia or Barbie pink.
Last year must have been rough
I just look like I'm following the trends. I'm not. I've been pink since the beginning.
You're like, I've been doing this. I've been about this life.
We just have to wait it out. And there will come a point where we're still rocking it because it is our style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel your pain.
I'm hanging in.
So, do you have a favorite outfit from Gossip Girl history?
Oh my God. Okay.
Kind of an impossible question.
It is. So my top favorite always is Blair's outfit from the first Thanksgiving episode, the Blair Waldorf Must Pie episode, which is the, it's like a brown Mark by Marc Jacobs dress. And like watching it, I think that she's worn, like, I can recognize, I think she's worn better outfits, right? But like that one for me is like the quintessential Blair Waldorf outfit. So it really sticks with me. And then like everything else kind of like slots in and out. And, there's the like Oscar de la Renta gown that she wears in Paris on like the train scene. Like, that's such a good outfit. What else? The white party outfit, which is another Mark by Marc Jacobs dress. It's like the ruffles and it's so good. I think her also, I've been doing so many of these. I think I've done almost 200 of Blair's outfits. I have spreadsheets. I had to start keeping spreadsheets on them because I was starting to accidentally double up on myself. Like, I was like, I need to make sure I don't do this. Like, let me keep a spreadsheet. I think I've done almost 200 of them, which is crazy. And just based on the quantity of them alone, I think that season two is actually my favorite overall because I've done the most from that. But now I'm getting to the point too where I'm like having to really scrape like the 200 outfits. First of all, it's still nowhere near all of them, which is crazy. But also, like, I'm having to pull like literally something she's worn for 45 seconds in some like intermediary. See, it's crazy. Anyway,
did you clock any in this episode
that
and any Blair or other character outfits that you'd want to highlight?
Oh man, so I love Blair's sleepover look. I think it's a strong episode for her overall, which is, I like her school uniform. It's like a sequined cardigan that she wears, but it's a 3.1 Philip Lim dress that's like the black with like the pearl detailing, and it's so good. And like the red sort of tuxedo looking jacket that she throws over it is very good. I also like Serena. I wouldn't wear it, but I also like Serena's outfit with like the studded dress and stuff.
That's black studded dress. Without having actually seen that exact dress out in the wild, I was like, this is the dress that I'm so familiar with. Like, this is 2007 in a nutshell. Like, absolutely. Everything looked like this, and it was a wonderful time. Like,
it was, and I miss it every day.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I feel like that dress suits her so well. It was just so perfectly picked for her.
No, like, she's always in some sort of, like, rock-studded jersey knit. That is, to me, the quintessential Serena look. And for a long time, Blake Lively dressed like that out in public, too. Like,
she did.
They really were one and the same. And she's really, I mean, these days she wears some
crazy,
kind of crazy, incoherent stuff. But that's because she styles herself, which is like why you should buy a stylist. But back when she was in that, like the Rockstead era, that was like a perfect, perfect look for her.
I think it's a good one.
Before we get into it, we ask our guests, who is your Gossip Girl boyfriend?
Oh, see, that's hard. That's really hard.
Hard because they're all so cute or they're all so flawed.
But like both, really. I really, like, knowing myself and knowing my truth, it would be Dan.
Mm-hmm.
My most controversial Gossip Girl take is that I'm very pro Dan and Blair together.
Whoa.
I know. Zoom does this when I'm in therapy, by the way. I'll be like in the middle of something and Zoom does like the thumbs up thing. And I'm like, I don't know why I did that.
Let's see if they do it for me. Anyway.
But this doesn't trigger it. It's like, anyway.
Whoever's surveilling our call agrees with you.
They were like, my FBI agent parked outside was like, yes, I agree.
I think you and the agent are the only two people who are pro Blair and Dan, but I support that.
Listen,
I kind of get it. I've never thought about it, but they both have the
horrible snobs.
Yeah, they're snobs.
They're horrible snobs. They have like the same interests. I think that if that had happened earlier than in season 5, I think that you could have done more with it. I think the problem was that by season 5, there was just like,
yeah,
so much other stuff going on.
Yeah, they were really throwing stuff at the wall at that point and just seeing what happened.
There was like the whole Prince situation, which I was like, I hate that guy.
Yeah.
So much. But yeah, I think knowing in my heart of hearts, I would be a Dan. Like, I almost said Chase, like he's like a real, I mean, Chase Crawford is a real person. But I almost said Chase, like the real person. Nate is so sweet and like so like puppy dog, like he's like a golden retriever come to life. Mm-hmm. Chuck is, I don't know. I am pro Chuck's redemption arc on the show overall, but like as for me and mine, no, I can't. Can't do that. So I think, but also like knowing that I love like a Brooklyn dirtbag guy, like a male manipulator type, like absolutely Dan. Right.
Yeah.
And I should clarify that my husband, who I love very much, is not that type. Before I was like, oh, you married? No, my husband's a wonderful person.
So glad to hear you didn't marry Dan.
Yeah. So just clarifying.
Should we get into the episode?
Let's do it. Do you want me to recap last week?
Sure, why not?
So last week, Blair's mom, Eleanor Waldorf, fat shamed and personality shamed Blair within an inch of her life, cruelly offering a star making nepo baby modeling gig before snatching it away like a croissant off a breakfast tray. Wow, Drew, you outdid yourself with this one.
That's really knocking it out of the park, honestly. I'm obsessed with this.
I learned for the best.
Gossip Girl
herself. Yeah. I went to boot camp.
While Eleanor's machinations led to a temporary rift between Blair and Serena, the besties made up by the end of the episode. Meanwhile, Dan hovered around the perimeter, offering sage advice, and Chuck saved Nate from falling in with Sebastian Stan's drug rug. Sebastian Stan, is that his name?
Oh, that's the actor.
Carter Bazin,
yeah.
Yeah, okay,
sure. I forgot about that when I was typing this.
And the Russian mob. Oh my god. What an episode. That was a doozy of an episode.
That was a great episode. This one was a great episode too, though. I think maybe the weakest of the ones we've covered so far, but still pretty good.
Yes and no. I don't know.
So, I guess recapping this week. Spotted, it's once again time for Blair's annual sleepover soiree. And with Serena a no due to her first date with Dan, there's an open bed up for grabs. Little Jenny Humphrey takes Serena's spot and makes a run for Blair's cunty crown by breaking gay Eric out of the asylum, wreaking unethical non-monogamous havoc at Visconti, and shoplifting at Eleanor Waldorf. While the rest of Manhattan hides in fear due to Jenny's crime spree, Dan and Serena's stiff first date loosens up after they lean into Dan's inherent poverty and shoot pool, and Lily and Rufus's sizzling chemistry heats up over a sizzling salad.
Oh my god, Drew, I love when you do the
research. You shouldn't be laughing at my own jokes.
You should. Absolutely, you should.
I love Manhattan hiding in fear due to Jenny's
crime spree.
It's really good. Oh god, Jenny is unhinged. That 14-year-old girl. Apparently.
I really love how like the craziest people on the show are the 14-year-olds. Like between Jenny and Eric, like beautiful like fag hag representation right there, but like they are such a fun pairing to me.
I really like them a lot, yeah.
Eric. Wait, what did you say? Gay jail?
I said gay Eric out of the asylum.
Okay.
Because he gets to go home this week though, which is nice.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I mean, I'm so excited to get into it. Should we start with Blair?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. Drew, what did you grade her?
For me, she gets my first A of the season. I thought she had a spectacular episode. So funny, so witty, never truly malicious. Just the right amount of chaos. She was so funny. Every look was good. I think she knocked it up.
Kyler, what say you?
Yeah, it's an A. It's an A for me. Because I think this is one of the first times that they really let Blair be, like, funny.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's, like you said, like, it's not mean.
Right.
But it's, like, a full display of her power in a way that doesn't feel like trying to banish anybody from the island of Manhattan.
Completely. I mean, we'll get into it, but even, like, down to the end, like, she maintains her power, but she invites little Jay along, and then she does a mean thing, but she respects Jay. I don't know. It's kind of like hazing, and it's working for me. And I don't think she's so evil after all. I think she's manipulative, but also respectful of other people's power when they
when they have it. Yeah.
I was going to say A+, but I'm going to stick with an A. Solid A.
I could go up to A+2, maybe. I always forget that's an actual grade.
And I never, not one that I got, but.
Not one that I got either. So.
So Blair is hosting her annual sleepover soiree with these like Tiffany crystal cookie jars and these big like dress up racks.
Yeah.
Designer clothing. I swear, when I saw that episode air on the CW, I nearly shit. I to this day, I don't know if we said this on or off recording, I want to be at that sleepover.
Oh, so. Yeah. I want to be at that sleepover. I want that bedding on like the trundle beds, the like satin duvets and everything.
Yeah. I love also as they show them, her maids setting up the party. They play this kind of little Barbie music in the background. It is so, so perfectly girly. And Blair's a princess and it shows.
Mm-hmm.
It's very satisfying.
Completely. Yeah. And Serena can't come. And Blair says some choice words to her that I'll remember for the rest of my days. Because when there's a Waldorf soiree, there's nothing else on the social calendar. And she says a line that I often use: I'm not a stop along the way, I'm a destination.
We were saying before we started recording, like, some of these I've seen so many times that I say the lines out loud, and that's one of them. On my couch, I'm like, I'm not a stop along the way.
I was watching this with my fiance, and when after she said that line, I was like, I that's one I say that.
That's me. I don't know if you know that. I say exactly. That.
I mean, we were saying last week, this is just, it's a show that boyfriends are obsessed with not watching. Like, Gabe has never seen Gossip Girl, is so, you know, it's not a show. It's not a show for boyfriends.
Oh, I made Sam watch the whole thing.
Oh my God, that's a good man.
And he did it. And he enjoyed it. And he got invested in it. You just have to find the way in. You just have to find the hook.
Right,
maybe this is me. I need to make my gay boyfriend watch this with me because he has never seen one single second of this show.
Then yes, what is he doing?
Early enough that it's time.
Bring him in. Loop him in.
This is a good test. Like a litmus test. Ooh, the test should be who he identifies with.
Yeah.
Imagine if you... Oof.
I forgot she was even on this show. Like, these, I will say these characters are a little disposable because I did not really notice that Chuck and Nate weren't here until most of the way through the episode.
Yeah, they're not on at all.
No.
But that is kind of the power of Blair and Serena. Like, they are so effortlessly charismatic, Serena included, that they just can carry the whole show.
Yeah. In that same scene we were just talking about, Serena says, I can't go, I have a thing, I have a Dan thing. And Blair, surrounded by minions who we've never seen before or since.
Or ever again.
She's probably killed off after this episode. She invites little Jay to replace Serena. And, you know, this is the beginning of little Jay's hazing week. I love her walking into the sleepover with her big Hello Kitty sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Sure, I have that sleeping bag.
Her Hello Kitty sleeping bag and like a pair of little bunny slippers, and Dorota rightfully disposes of it.
Dorota's a real one.
Yeah.
So funny. We're still on Blair, but a few Jenny moments thrown in. I love her offering another line I remember forever, her offering Jenny martini. What does she say?
She's like, I don't drink.
She's like, I don't drink vodka. She's like, oh no, thanks, I don't drink vodka. And Blair says, good, because it's gin as it should be, which I think about every time I order a martini, because I do like a vodka martini. And I every time I do it, I think I'm a failure.
So, as it should be.
I'm like, well, whoops, sorry.
I also like, she says, so swallow that. Something about swallowing a martini just makes it sound so much like,
yeah.
I mean, that is like the Upper East Side version of Chug. Like, she's like, it's telling her to like butt chug this martini and then like break into a store. Like, that's
it's a nice little alliteration, because it's like, so like, swallow that drink, or like swipe your Metro card back home or whatever.
Oh yes, that's it. Oh my God, don't pretend you're like something like that.
It's something like that. It's exactly that.
And then Blair and Serena, or Blair and Jenny, have this little moment where Jenny's trying on different outfits and Blair is telling her, like, to Hannah Montana, to Beyonce, as the song Rock Star by Prima Jay plays. Oh, a song I definitely listened to on my iPod 5.
Yeah, Prima Jay was a girl group formed for the Bratz movie, if younger listeners do not know that.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh my God, yeah, they were like two cousins whose names both started with Jay, and that's why were called Prima Jay, because Prima is cousin in Spanish for people who don't speak Spanish. You could really just name a girl group anything back in the day, and I'm really obsessed wild.
With that. Okay, I did not know that, because I didn't dive deep on the soundtrack very often, but that's impressive.
So funny. I mean, it just is such a, hearing that song really unlocked something in my brain.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, remember this nothing song that I loved.
That was so quintessential. I also love the makeover scene because Blair doesn't like half the things that she puts on or whatever, but I'm like, these were on your rack, so how did they end up in your house?
Yeah, that's so true. That's a great question. How, I mean, she Eleanor Waldorf's probably getting gifts left and left.
Yeah.
But oh, yeah.
She also tells Jenny her face looks like it's going to a bat mitzvah, which, I mean, she is 14. We have to remember.
Yeah.
So it probably was. Like, it probably should have been.
Going on later. They're playing Truth or Dare and the minions are making out. Like, this is a sleepover.
For a while, I was developing a theory that Blair was also bisexual.
Good theory.
She is
bisexual.
I really think so. It would explain a lot of what's happening vis-a-vis the Serena relationship to me. Mm-hmm. That there's also like a little bit of like a sexual envy there.
Yeah.
I was gathering evidence for a while, and then because I habitually delete like old social media posts, I couldn't find it anymore. But like that was one of them too. Was the sleepover scene where like she looks actively disappointed that Jenny passes on doing a dare.
Yeah, I so love that theory.
Yeah, there's definitely a Tumblr, now defunct probably.
Oh, almost
way back in the day, that's like at bisexual Blair Waldorf, and it's just it's like the homeland like pin board, like connecting all the clues together.
That would be a really great like Instagram handle or something for some rich bisexual girl. Bisexual Blair Waldorf.
Blair Waldorf. That would be really incredible.
Good idea if there are any rich bisexuals listening.
In need of an Instagram handle.
Good idea.
The outfit I always remember from this episode is the minion who steals the doorman outfit and puts it on.
Yes.
For whatever reason, I'm like, oh, that's so chic.
Do you know why? Because do you associate it with that episode of Sex and the City where Samantha sleeps with Charlotte's doorman?
Oh yeah,
I think that's
now, but that's a great connection.
I love that.
I wonder if they knew they were making that connection.
I think it's just a fun chaos teenager. I love that Jenny's like, "What's the doorman wearing?" And no one answers.
Good question.
Oh, I love Jenny asking questions that no one answers.
Also, a really fun costume detailing is so a lot of times on the show, Blair wears initial necklaces from a brand called Alex Wu.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny's wearing one that's just a question mark.
Oh my god, no.
Which is, she doesn't know who she really is. Good.
Yeah. Oh my god, that is really, it's such a good detail in the costumes.
Oh, this is why we have you. That is so funny. Who do you think said, like, what do you think they said? Like, and Jenny, it's not going to be Jay. It's not going to be a J for little Jay.
It's just going to be a question mark.
Everyone applauds.
Yeah. Eric Damon is a genius. So.
That's his last name. Okay, thank you. We've been saying Eric blank for weeks now.
Damon.
We need to have him on.
I'm obsessed with him. He's the best.
Does she ever wear a J? I feel like maybe there's some point where it turns into a J.
I think by the point that that's all happening, so Blair really only wears hers the first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think by the time that that's all happening, like the initial thing is kind of gone.
Good
job. But she might. I should look for that more. But I just know, like, I love seeing it. It's just a diamond question mark. It's like it's just such a nice detail. Cool.
Oh my god, that's a wonderful detail. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
This is my have you guys ever seen this it's like a memed thing now where like if you're watching Lord of the Rings, for example, with someone who's like heavily invested in Lord of the Rings, you see that scene with Viggo Mortensen, I think in Two Towers, and they'll be like, "Did you know that Viggo Mortensen really broke his foot on this helmet and he screamed?" And have you guys seen this?
No.
Oh my god.
I think so.
Well, now I get to be that person for you guys. So there's a scene in Lord of the Rings where Viggo Mortensen kicks a helmet and he lets out the scream. And apparently it's a take where he actually broke his foot.
Oh, like, my God.
Taking the sum. Anyway, that's me watching Gossip Girl, except it's me like pausing every like 30 minutes to tell you a fun fact. Like, oh, did you guys know that they wrote the Guitar Hero competition into this episode because Blake Lively really was good at Guitar Hero? It's like, oh, that's me. Is did you know that?
True? Is that true? True. Oh, my
it
God.
Is true.
That is so random.
Yeah. Okay.
That is crazy. And I also, because that screamed product placement to me at the time and still does.
It might still be product placement because was the CW circa 2007, but also apparently she like actually was really good at Guitar Hero. That could also be a story they concocted. Do you know what I mean?
I think that. I mean, maybe a little both. Maybe like she was really good at it and they're like, yeah, that's why.
That's great.
I bet she was better than Slash. I bet Blake Lively is, if she, you put a real guitar in her hands, is probably one of the top five guitarists in history.
I would love to see it.
I just remember seeing that, and even my like underdeveloped brain knew that that was a shark joke. Come on, Guitar Hero.
I loved that game, and then that game was so good. Anyways, that's me being annoying about Ghost. That's like me being like, she's wearing a question mark instead of her initials. Well,
if any other tidbits come up, please share.
I will. Did you guys know? Second, you said that. Did you guys know that the Ostroff Center is named after Don Ostroff, who was the president of the CW at the time?
So funny.
I'm applauding. Oh,
that's incredible.
And it sounds so. Wait, that is hilarious.
So is genius.
There are little details that even if that wasn't true, there's something really funny about the Ostroff Center.
The Ostroff Center, yeah. Don Ostroff, and she used to work for. She worked for Condé Nast Entertainment for a while, and then I think she was at Spotify. I don't know what she does now. I'm not following her career this closely. I'm not like that much of a Gossip Girl super fan. But yeah, and so, like Jessica Queller, like Headmistress Queller, is also named after like a producer or a writer on the show or something. I just like when they do that. Like that's always really fun to me when they incorporate real people into their shows.
So I did not put two and two together for some reason that Don Ostroff at Spotify is the same Don Ostroff at CW, but Don Ostroff at Spotify signed Harry and Meghan to their pod deal. Their pod.
Whoa. What a world.
At one point are like corporate overlords for this podcast. And she, I believe, is no longer with the company because of the creative direction.
Interesting.
They're in-house pod network has taken.
Wow. Interesting.
Very interesting.
But yeah, she was president of the CW, which was like a brand new network. Like Gossip Girl was like their flagship programming. I don't know if they call it that in TVC. I don't know what I'm talking about. But yeah, so that's why it's called the Ostroff Center.
You got a lot of scenes at the Ostroff Center this week too, because Blair dares Jenny
to
jailbreak Eric.
Oh my God.
Which is so good.
Perfect.
I also just Blair's psychotic performance.
Yeah.
The woman at the front desk at the Ostroff Center with her smeared Joker makeup. She's listing. Okay. This is another moment where I was like, there's no way this worked. I know it's a TV show, but like, she's basically distracting the woman working at the front desk by acting really pilled out.
In need of help.
Mm-hmm. Need of help. And then they...
all the Pams.
Oh, yeah.
The Pams.
All the Pams, really.
So good.
Caffeine, nicotine, ketamine. Listing all the all of her hobbies. And then Jenny gets Eric and they go to this bar, which I don't know how they got into as 14-year-olds, but... You know, that's the magic of TV.
Teens
are always drinking martinis where they're not supposed to.
Or like at all. The other thing that I noticed this episode that I hadn't thought about at all while watching it is when Jenny takes a sip of a martini. I don't know about you guys, but the first time I had a martini, I was like, this is the most disgusting thing. Now I'm all sold. I'm all in. But like at the time, I was like, let me spit this out. And she just swallows it like it's water. Because it was, I'm sure.
I wonder if, I don't know, I can sort of buy it in a, that is a reflex you cannot control.
No, that's like a, this is the worst thing that's ever happened in my life.
With gin. Oh my God, you're drinking just gin.
Just gin.
A woman with a pure palate who has never experienced that before. I don't know. I don't, that's a really good point. Not even a wince.
Not even a grimace.
Not even a grimace on that one.
Then they go to Visconti. And then, you know, more martinis there. Once you've had one, why not?
Yeah, I would be comatose if I were Jenny having my first martini and then like second through fifth martinis in one night. I would be like rolling down the street at that
I'm a
point.
Fully grown adult human and I can't do two, yeah. more than two without being like ill, like in trouble.
Have they had dinner? Like, what are they? Martinis?
They had cookies.
They had cookies. They're teenagers. They're invincible.
At this bar club, Blair makes out, or they're continuing their game of truth or dare, and Blair makes out with some hedge fund guy, and all his buddies are saying, oh, like, I'm telling Amanda, and she finds out that he has a girlfriend. Blair steals his cell phone and dares Jenny to call Amanda, the girlfriend, and tell her what happened. And this is kind of the beginning of little Jay showing that she's here to play.
Wrong. Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
she, what does she say on the phone? She says, I think I wrote it down. Says, this is Claire. I just had my tongue down your boyfriend's throat and he neglected to tell me you existed until after it was over.
He's a real catch.
He's a real catch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little day, you know.
Incredible.
So funny.
I think we can wrap up Blair and move on to Jenny, but Blair tricks Jenny into shoplifting at Eleanor Waldorf and runs away. And we'll get into how that wraps up, but just plays a prank on Jenny after kind of pretending to be her girl.
Yeah.
So Jenny, for me this week, not quite an A, but an A-. I thought she acquitted herself really well at the sleepover. Handled like her like keg of martinis like a champ. Successfully broke her gay friend out of prison. Not prison. I mean, she had herself quite the week. I don't think a week in which she got locked inside a store could ever be a full A. But that really was the only miss. She did pretty well. Oh, she did have a little bit of gay panic, though, which I didn't. She didn't. She saw those two girls kissing, was like, not for me.
No.
She's like, gross. That's a good point about the being locked in a store, because I was just going to give her an A, but that is like a mark off, you know?
No, I give her an A because of that, because she like comes up with a lie so easily in front of those cops.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, I'm Blair and this is my mom's store and like, here's why I'm here and you can't call her because she's in Paris. And like, I was not that good of a liar at 14. I'm still not
no.
that
good
of a liar. I would have freaked out.
I like the idea of Blair giving her the keys too, as if this is some sort of escape room that involves lying your way out of trouble. like, I mean, that's a real test.
Incarceration.
Yeah, she gave like a jigsaw trap for Jenny.
Maybe she did. I mean, yeah, I want to say like A/A. I don't know. I feel bad giving Blair an A and Jenny an A-. I think they're both A's.
I can see that
too. I think it's the first time the show shows that they're like pretty evenly matched in terms of how manipulative they can be or like how they can play the game or whatever. Yeah.
This becomes a really fun pairing throughout the rest of the show too. Mm-hmm. I don't really think before this episode, Jenny has really justified her existence on the show this much. Perfect episode though for her. But I mean, besides the store locking in. And Taylor Momsen is a very funny actor.
Yes.
Completely. I mean, yeah, we have joked on past episodes about sometimes her line delivery is just confusing. Like she'll say something and she'll have a slight accent or it sounds like she's almost a sim trying to speak English, but
I so you've discussed that I'm your sister is what I do line where she does it in that like
Tyler, you're perfect.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's what I do, and you're like, okay.
I really want to get a soundboard for the podcast and put that on it just so we can press a button and have her say it every time.
Thank you for knowing exactly what I'm talking.
It's a choice, you know.
There are other ones that I probably have written down somewhere, but every now and then, like, her voice will do a weird thing that is inhuman, but oh my god. But, you know, she's growing into her role. I don't remember if there are any other weird vocal things coming, but She's like you said, justifying herself as a good girl on the show.
Yeah. We kind of talked about the setup to how she gets to the sleepover a little bit. I did really like her just standing there after Serena leaves and looking expectantly at Blair for like, Blair. Are you going to give it to me now? Like, give me the invite. So funny. Yeah.
I mean, just her performance throughout, her performance at the bar. I don't know. She's good. I think it's really, she's strong up until the end. I think she gets out when she, so did we explain what happens with the store? Or did we just talk around it?
I think we talked around it.
Okay. So Drew, can you explain? I'm like, now I'm confused with, I don't really remember what the dare was or.
So the dare was for Jenny to steal a jacket off of one of Eleanor's mannequins in her very rinky dink storefront. You can kind of tell where the show cuts some of the budget corners sometimes. And because I looked into the store and it was literally two mannequins out front and the entire rest of the store, nothing. Like it was complete, like a completely white void behind it. But she has to take a jacket off. So she takes the keys, goes inside, is midway through getting the jacket off the mannequin where somehow Blair activates the security alarm. So it's blaring and she gets locked in the store somehow too, because I think probably because it's an emergency security yeah. system. So that's when she starts lying her way out of trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. The alarm goes off. The cops show up and she Blair. Like comes up with a really wonderful lie about being Blair and whatever. Also the reason here's, I'm going to do it again. The reason that the store looks like that is you guys know that the designer for Eleanor Waldorf was a real designer, Abigail Lorick, and they just took her collection and used it. Okay. So the costume design team was friends with her. And Abigail Lorick, you can look her up. Now she has a line of like surf. They're like swimsuits and stuff. It's really cool. But they were like, okay, well, our friend Abigail is a designer, so they borrowed her clothes. So, like, the Bad News Blair episode with the photo shoot and stuff is all Abigail Lorick's stuff. And I think she plays, like, an intern or something. She's, like, in one of the scenes. She doesn't have any lines, but she's just kind of in the background.
Oh, my God. We just covered that episode last week. We need to go back and
Yeah.
Oh,
my God. That's
so, whenever you see Eleanor Waldorf designs, that's who. Like, that's the actual designer. And they just use her clothes and then.
That's genius. That's so funny. Yeah, well, that that store did
was empty.
Was looking like
was empty.
Like one like what do you know the Portlandia sketch I'm talking about? It's like one store, three shirts where like they're
almost, I feel like yeah.
Yes,
I do. Something like that. But yeah, Jenny says that she's Blair, tells the cop she's Blair, like, you can call my mom, but she's in Paris, like, I'll lock up, see, look, I'm real, I'm Blair. Gets out of jail time, goes to Blair's house to declare victory, wearing the jacket she stole, and tells Blair, like, I'm going home, and Blair says, nobody ever leaves a sleepover. And then Jenny delivers the best line. She says, well, I guess there's a verse for everything. Oh, and I'm keeping the jacket, if that's okay with you. Monday, lunch on the steps. And yeah. Then, you know, Blair's respecting her, and she says, done and done, which I remember. That wasn't that, like, such an iconic Blair, like, Blairism from the books, done and done?
Oh, it might be. I don't even, it's been so long since I've read the books, but that sounds right.
Yeah, but something about that, like.
That feels right. That feels spiritually correct.
Right. Oh God. I just yeah, that was a cool moment. Good for Jenny.
The Jenny moment I always remember from this episode is her like mob wife hair flip in the elevator. Mm-hmm. It is such a power move, like ending the crime spree with just like one final like boss bitch like
hair flip. Hair
just went crazy like that too. But yeah, it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff.
Unbelievable. All right, Serena, I don't know about all this.
Yeah, I was not. Look, I am the number one Serena apologist. And I, every time we cut to her scenes this episode, I was like, okay.
Let's
go back to where we were. I would truly rather be with Rufus and Lily than on this date right now.
Just like, yeah, this episode was a snooze beyond the characters we just talked about. But Serena, I would give maybe like, I don't know, I want to say B minus, C plus.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's very nice.
Okay. All right. Share your grades.
I'm giving her like a D.
Bro.
Whoa. Okay.
She's so, because here's the thing. She has no tact whatsoever in dealing with poor Dan Humphreys' very clear, very obvious attempts at impressing her.
That's so true.
She's like,
just pretend to be impressed.
Are you going to take me? First of all, what kind of person does she think that Dan Humphrey is? Because she's like trying to get information out of Jenny. And she's like, is he taking me to like a cool underground show in Brooklyn? And I was like, this man sits in his apartment, dreams about you, and watches like art house movies. Like, what do you think he's doing?
She's really fetishizing his
Brooklynism.
Upper middle classness. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really strange. And then, like, she's, like, dressed down, and then she's disappointed about having to change, and then she's, like, disappointed to not be in a Vespa, and then she's disappointed to be at this French restaurant. I will give her points. The reason she's on F is because at least she has the sense to pick up the bill so Dan doesn't have to pay for that dinner.
That's true.
It's so much.
Yeah, I'll split the difference with a C, but this is a bad episode for Serena. I thought she looked so good, though, that it was higher than a D. Like, her
hair, she was so beautiful.
I love her boho style. Mm-hmm. Like, seeing some of the, like, the new, like, Fashion Week collections that just came out, too. Like, I feel like everyone is about to start dressing like Serena Vanderwood.
It's coming back, too. Yeah, it's definitely coming back.
And I was so mad when Lily told her to put away her, like, brown leather saddlebag and gave her that, like, little, like, clutch.
Yeah.
And I was like, the bag was so good. It was such a good bag, though.
It did enable her to forget
her phone. Hello? Oh, no.
But, I mean, also, just Dan arriving at her apartment in a suit and Serena's, like, in a long, skinny scarf.
Skinny neck. Scarf.
Yeah. I don't know.
That serves no purpose.
No.
It's the most like talking to Eric, the costume designer, Eric, because I've interviewed him about it and stuff before. Like Kate Moss was heavy on the inspiration board, especially for like early Serena. And I feel that's now fit where it's like, I could picture exactly the like, the Glastonbury Festival outfit or whatever that Kate Moss was wearing was like the inspiration for that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, she is very like, Kate Moss. That's her. She's effortless. She's messy. She's, you know,
she's 6'3".
She's towering over all us 5'4" girlies. I wonder how tall Blair is. She gives 5'4".
Yeah, that's right.
I would have guessed 5'6".
Really?
I guess right. Those aren't.
Let's do it. We did this with the guys in one of our first episodes. I'm looking up Leighton Meester height. She's 5'5". 5'6" was a good guess.
Wow.
Right in between. Okay. And what, Serena, my guess for excuse me.
Oh, I think I've Googled Blake Lively's height.
I'm going to guess 5'8". Is that too high?
No. She's 5'10".
Tall woman. Okay.
She's a very tall woman.
Okay. But Tyler, I think you're right. The sensible thing to do was swipe her mom's card for dinner.
Yes.
I thought was nice, but also like, I don't know, you also said she should have at least pretended to be a little impressed, like
not giving buck up time. Buck up, Buttercup. Like, it's like, this man is trying to do a nice thing for you. You could say at the top like, hey, if you're like, I appreciate that you're trying to impress me, but like, let's do something like before you even sit down. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And they didn't even have cancellation fees back then.
No. You didn't have to put your card down.
You didn't have to put your card down on Resy to like get into whatever stiff ass restaurant there.
I was just so thrilled though that we got a scene of Blake Lively acting disinterested about something, which is one of my favorite modes that she gets to do.
Yes.
She was like peering under her hair curtain, being like,
My favorite thing to watch. Now I need to know what your favorite thing. My favorite thing to watch Blake Lively do is handle a martini glass.
Oh my God.
In this and in A Simple Favor, which is unironically one of my favorite movies.
Oh, it's guys... so good. So, so, so. The FBI agent's so happy.
Oh my gosh. Like, he's like, I love
He's
that.
Like, balloons. I love that movie. I have never seen anybody handle a martini glass the way. There's a scene in season two, like early on. It's like the Nertini episode with Amanda. I've never seen anyone handle a martini glass the way Blake Lively does. And she should be in more projects exclusively where she gets to handle martini glasses, even though I think she's like sober in real life.
Wow. That's something I need to keep my eyes out for.
Yes. It will change your life.
Blake makes some insane choices on this show. And I think they all work. Like, this is sort of a flat character, and you have to be flat while also making it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tough tightrope to walk. And Blake Lively should have 5 Emmys for making it work somewhat as well as she does.
She's so, like, blithely unaware of, like, how easy things are for her. And yeah. Even this episode, it's like, this poor man, this poor boy, just really wants to impress you and be amongst you. And you're kind, and you need to, like, cut him a break on the lame restaurant, you know?
Yeah.
And she's not even that worried about, like, Eric being on the loose.
It's interrupting your date.
Yeah, it does interrupt the date. She has to go confront Blair. But yeah, before that, we'll yeah, maybe we should rate or grade Dan before we get into this their stupid dive bar date, which won't take more than a second because
yeah,
I just like I don't need to see these two practice pool or whatever. I
no,
Dan is a B.
Okay,
that's generous.
Thank you. As previously stated, I have a very real soft spot for Dan, even though I think he's an asshole and a psycho. That's like that's a B if we ignore the undercurrent of what we learn at the end of this show. If we address the gossip girl of it all, like, no, he's constantly running an F because that's crazy.
We can't acknowledge it yet though.
Mm-mm. No, so like, if just knowing what I know now, it's a like he's trying his he gets his little piggy he breaks into his little piggy bank for all those quarters to take Serena to a French restaurant.
That pound of coins in a sack. I think I'm gonna maybe give him a C. I think he just also when I was watching this originally, I remember thinking he was cute and charming, but now I'm just like, you are so annoying.
You have so much going on. He also, like, it's interesting how quickly they get into, like, the nut of what will be their problem for every episode that they're ever together or not together is the, like, you don't think I can afford this? Like, I can afford that. Like, this huge chip on his shoulder about being from Brooklyn. Is kind of wild.
It is kind of wild. I mean, yeah, it's funny. He at the restaurant, he's self-aware enough to be like, yeah, I come here all the time, wink wink, but still trying to act like he knows what he's talking about. He orders the quote-unquote lay pin.
What is that?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, awful. Yep. And then of course they Serena wants a real Dan Humphrey date and they go play pool.
At a dive bar. Yeah, I mean, look, I like pool at a dive bar just fine, but this was, I would say, a clunky juxtaposition that they did here.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the best storytelling the show's ever done.
Good point.
The number one thing, this never used to bother me, but since moving to New York, The number one thing that will grind my gears when I watch this show now is the speed and ease with which they move from not just neighborhood to neighborhood, but borough to borough. Because like the date is on the Upper East Side. They go to this bar, which is ostensibly based on exterior shots in Brooklyn, but which is in fact in Meatpacking. They go from Meatpacking to Midtown, which is where the bar, like Visconti, the club is. Then they go back down to Meatpacking. Like they're just, yeah. they're doing things that I wouldn't do in a single day, let alone a single evening, you know? And they're taking the subway, arguably, ostensibly. It's just a lot going on. And it's something that like I never would have noticed or known, obviously, when I was not living here. But now that I live here, I'm like, why would you do that?
I mean, the end when they're twirling around kissing in the middle of the Meatpacking District is, I mean, it's so silly and campy and fun. And I know it's supposed to be romantic, too, within like the context of the show. But like, it's just so silly, too. A real New York romantic moment. Like, I also, the real silly part of the episode for me, and one that I was very entertained by, but like was very sitcom-y in a way that the show usually isn't, was when all of the characters are at Visconti.
Yes.
And they're doing that like Spider-Man meme where all the Spider-Men are like pointing at each other.
Yeah. Like, they like instigate a fight because like, they show up at this bar and then they show up the same time as Amanda, the aforementioned fiance of the hedge fund guy, who's like, are you Claire? Are you Claire? And then he's like, they're literally teenagers. And like that, and like, it's so funny. So then when they get in a fight and the bouncer's kicking them out, and then Eric finally shows up and he's like, see, I told you we were fine. Like, that's very funny. Like in a sitcom, it's very satisfying.
Yeah.
I had not heard the word jailbait since the last time I watched this particular episode, and I was once again reminded how gross the word jailbait
is. It is. So yeah.
Really, really, really gross. I'm glad to have not heard it since I last watched this
episode. Yeah.
Should we move on to Rufus and Lily before?
I would love to know. Okay, so what do you guys hate so much about Rufus?
Okay, so
this early on, distinction, is rude.
I don't hate Lily. I think Lily serves consistently. I really love an uptight wasp that is just like an archetype I feel so comfortable with. Kelly Rutherford is so good on this show, and no one really ever talks about it. So I'm glad that our podcast is here to uplift her, because she is just so tremendous on this show. Her being saddled with Rufus, who is such a wet noodle, is like, you hate to see a good woman down. You just hate to see.
That's fair.
I'm bored by them. I mean, I think I especially hate Rufus. He just is. He's wet noodly. Yeah, he's annoying, and the plot line is just so stupid and moves slow. And his wife's upstate, and he's not. And oh, they used to date, and she hates Brooklyn, and he hates high society. It's just so tired.
It just causes such gratifying drama for me later in this season. By like after season two, like when it continues to kind of go like this, I'm like, that's enough, we gotta pack it up and keep it moving. But in this season, I like their whole shtick. One of my favorite lines, we were talking about lines, so we repeat, one of my favorite lines is like after he's called Allison and Hudson and the guy picks up or whatever and he goes back home, when Lily calls looking for Dan, he answers the phone and says, this better not be my wife. And she goes, Rufus, do you answer the phone like that all the time? And it's like so funny to me.
Funny.
It's like something like, I hope you don't always answer the phone like this. It's really funny. And then later on, when she shows up at his house, when she's like, so shockingly, none of my people know any of your people, and either Dan Humphrey is an alias or your son is very unpopular. It's like such a funny read on a high schooler.
I mean, totally. I also like it, without Rufus, I think I could handle Lily.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, every scene with them, I'm like, this is dragging.
Yeah.
I did like it when they were together making salad in the kitchen, though. Like, they do sort of have chemistry. And I love Lily's backstory as a rock chick, to quote Avril Lavigne. Like, do I buy that Kelly Rutherford and this current incarnation of Lily Vanderwoodson, like, have that in them? Not really. But yeah. I will take the show's word for it. All of her lines this week were so good. I don't know why she's... Well, oh, wait, no, I do know why. It makes sense. Like, she thought that Serena and Dan broke Erica out the asylum.
Yeah, that's so when...
misunderstanding.
When she gets the call from the Ostroff Center, she's like, who did he leave with? And they describe her as young, beautiful, and blonde.
Mm-hmm. That's a sister.
It's like, that's Serena. And it's like, New York doesn't have a single other young, beautiful blonde in the entire damn town.
It's also very unprofessional to be a receptionist at a rehabilitation facility / asylum to describe someone as young, beautiful, young blonde. And blonde.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, oh God.
But yeah, I guess Rufus and Lily, I don't know. What do you grade them together? Do you grade them separately?
I mean, I think the rules change week to week. I gave Rufus a C- for being sorry to use this word, but somewhat cucked by his wife.
For sure.
But I think Lily's a B plus for me because she really turned the party out this week.
Yeah. I mean,
I would agree with that. I would dock her slightly for the whole, like, not letting Eric come home thing when he was, like, allowed to come home.
Yeah, but that's classic WASP behavior. That's like, true. She's going to keep her son locked in the asylum as long as it takes.
Yeah,
that's true.
She's obsessed with keeping her son in jail. And that's why, yeah, I'm going to give them a collective C-. Rufus for being annoying and boring, and Lily for keeping her son in jail.
I think worse than being boring, Rufus and Dan's biggest issue is they both have just like this, like, I don't know how they leave the house with the chip so big on their shoulder that it's like,
yeah,
the Rufus self-righteous, like, there's a man in your house. And like, meanwhile, like, you are flirting around with your ex and like
making salad. Anyway,
making salad. That's another thing that she's Lily has such good lines, to your point. Like, I don't think we talk about Kelly Rutherford enough, is that when she like first arrives in Rufus's house, she's like, well, I'm going to wait here. I'll pass on that non-premium liquor you're drinking.
So good.
And I'm like,
oh, she's a little bit of Blair too. You
know? Yeah, she's really good.
Non-premium.
Also, shout out to Kelly Rutherford for being the face of Tommy Hilfiger this season.
Yes.
I've been getting those ads of her walking around Grand Central Station in trench coats on my TikTok, like, non-stop. For the past 2 weeks. She looks so good.
She does.
Yeah.
She's on some French TV show now, like some French streaming show.
So
about male escorts or something, right?
It's actually kind of dark why she's on French TV.
Well, is it the custody stuff?
It's the custody thing. Yeah, like, just quick rundown, because it's not that fun drama, really. But, like, Kelly Rutherford was married to some French businessman.
Right.
For a few years in, like, while the show was going on. And she breaks up with him while she is pregnant with her second child.
Mm-hmm.
And the second child is born. They're getting divorced. And he essentially, like, forces his hand to get primary custody of both kids, including the one who is in utero at the time of the breakup.
Right.
And she bankrupted herself.
Right.
At some point in the 2010s, trying to fight this legal battle. And as of, like, I believe as of this year, like, she still doesn't have primary custody. So she lives in France part of the time to be close to the kids.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Sad. Yeah. I remember when all that was going down, I feel really badly for her. But the show, I don't know what the show is about, like, male escorts or something, I think.
Yeah, and as long as she gets to be having fun and acting, yeah, and making money in France and also being the major face of an international ad campaign, like, good for her. She was at a lot of the fashion week shows,
yeah,
in Paris too. Like, I think she's having a moment right now.
Glad for a Kelly Rutherford comeback, because I think that she's great and she's so nice. Like, she seems very chill, very normal. Yeah. Very nice.
I don't think you can have like a 35-year career in Hollywood and not be nice and approachable and easy to work with. Like a professional yeah. woman. Love yeah. that. Should we get into our final segments?
Let us do it. Needle drop of the week.
This is hard because it's like, well, this episode doesn't have as many great needle drops as like other episodes do, but I do love the really random use of like Ozzy Osbourne, and that Serena queued up was like, this is my choice.
Osbourne. That's a really good choice on your
quirky girl
for you. Yeah.
You're so cool. You're so not like other girls.
I had to shout out Wine Up by Kat DeLuna, an all-time great one-hit wonder. I loved that song. And when it came on, I was like, oh, yeah, this came out in 2007. What a song.
What a world.
Yeah. I mean, you know I'm going to give it to Prima J, rock star, every day of the week.
Has to be Prima J.
Okay, outfit of the week.
It's the Philip Lim, the like black dress that Blair wear. I mean, it's so good.
Love it. Why don't I have an answer to this? You know what? Okay, Drew, you first while I ponder.
So I did say the doorman jacket or the doorman outfit earlier. Definitely up for contention. I also loved Lily's leather motorcycle jacket that she wears to Brooklyn. I'm not usually a big motorcycle jacket fan, but the quilting on this was so good. And I love that she's like slumming it in Brooklyn and
got
her like rock chick attire again to go back.
I also think like in the first season, they had Lily in a lot of really cool like denim outfits that they moved away from a lot in later seasons, which I understand because it became kind of more editorial. But like I miss that kind of vibe from her too.
Yeah. It was very like realistic chic mom in a way that like all the outfits get a little bit more outlandish as time goes on. Which is good for us because they're more fun to talk about. But I've always found like Lily's style and also Eric's style too. Like he'll never get shouted out in this corner.
But,
he's only been in like scrubs the entire time he's been here. But I like his style a lot too.
Honestly, the only one I can think of is our girl Serena's mini dress with the scoop on it. So I'll give it to her because that is an iconic Serena outfit.
So good. Yeah.
Okay. Best line read. I did not come prepared really. I'm going to think about it, but best line read. What do you
think? I have unlocked and loaded.
What is yours?
So when Jenny shows up to the sleep over, Gossip Girl says, "You better hope that Hello Kitty sleeping bag doubles as a parachute."
Yeah,
that was so funny.
I know. You know what's funny is like those are so important, and I never think about them when I'm thinking about like favorite line reads, which I should, because Kristen Bell really
she knows how to read a line,
especially later when they get like really insane, like truly batshit.
Oh my god,
she really knocks them out of the park.
She's getting started.
What is mine? I really think it might be Lily being like, "I hope you don't always answer your phone like that, Rufus," because like it's just so good. I want to make sure I'm gonna look this up.
Yeah, maybe I will do "Your face looks like it's going to a bat mitzvah," but not as a line read, just as a line,
just in life.
Yeah,
let me pull up.
There were just, I mean.
Yeah, I do want to shout out as a rare moment of well, not even that rare, but like I'm a big SVU historian, as people on the listeners of Pod know. And when Gossip Girl said putting out an APB, Gossip Girl, that really appealed to me as a viewer of both programs.
APB, yeah, it's the Rufus, "This better not be my wife," and then Rufus, "Do you always answer the phone like that?" It's such a good, because she delivers it with like the right amount of, she's still panicked trying to find her son, but she's like, "What a weird fucking thing to say when you answer your phone." Yeah. Like, it's just such a good line delivery from Kelly Rutherford.
Yeah. And I also like that other line you mentioned, that either Dan Humphrey's an alias or your son is not very popular.
Yeah.
Wow. She kind of killed this up. All right.
He's a teenager. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
Your son is not very popular.
Love it.
Okay, here's a newish one. I guess we're only on episode, what, 5? So everything's new. But we've been doing Bully of the Week and Victim of the Week.
Oh, interesting.
Which can exist in separate feuds, conflict.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, I think Serena was the Bully of the Week because, again, I just don't think the way that she handled the Dan date was, she was so passive aggressive about it and so, like, shitty and rude, you know?
Being weird about the whole thing and not very classy.
Victim of the Week might be Dan, but not for that reason, specifically for the Kelly Rutherford line read about him not being very popular.
Amazing.
I think Blair has to be my Bully of the Week just because she executed her hazing campaign so well. It really was a tour de force. I'll give Amanda the Victim of the Week. Who showed up to the club looking for Claire. Wasn't even looking for the right girl. It just, hey, people have bad days, and Amanda had a bad day this week.
Amanda had her life victim. And maybe her engagement ruined by literal teenagers.
I think maybe victim is Rufus because he so did not see it coming when a man picked up the phone when he called his wife. And, you know, I think he should have maybe had a hunch, but it seems like his world came crashing down. He had no idea. So that is that he's victim for that one. And bully, I think it's Blair, I guess. I think Blair. Just because she's the queen bully in ways both good and bad.
She did run a hazing campaign. That seems very fair.
She was hazing this week, so she's default bully in my brain.
That's very true.
So our final segment every week is XOXO, which is a cultural thing we want to recommend this week that is not Gossip Girl related. I chose the song Breathe, (2 AM) by Anna Nalick. That is my cultural thing I want to recommend this week. I have been listening to this song nonstop for 2 weeks now because the new Kacey Musgraves song samples or interpolates it, but I think it was an accidental. I wrote this song that has the exact same chords.
And I have to give them credit.
By Anna Nalick. And the Kacey song is really good too, but that is not what I'm recommending this week. I am recommending Breathe, (2 AM) by Anna Nalick, a song that turns 20 years old this year.
Incredible.
Makes me feel ancient.
Tyler, do you have one? I'm scrambling. I don't think.
Wait, now I feel like I just finished the show Rami on Hulu. It's not done. I think they're doing one more season, but there had only been 3 seasons up until now. And I'm, again, perpetually late to anything. So I just finished it this week and it's so, so good. I'm such a fan of The Bear. Mm-hmm. Like everybody, like every other media consuming human on this planet. And it's interesting to watch, especially season 1 of Rami, which I think they filmed in like 2019. It like predates The Bear. But Christopher Storer was a producer on it, and see kind of the formula that I feel like Christopher Storer uses in The Bear, in that it's a show ostensibly about this one character and kind of his life, but then it focuses in on the people around him too. I don't know. It's also just such a beautiful show. I ended with a huge crush on Rami, which is, I don't mm-hmm. think, the correct takeaway from this show, but he's very hot.
He is very hot. I haven't
he's
seen
so
good
show. Looking. Oh my God.
He was so good in Poor Things.
Yes.
Very happy that he's really breaking out in a big
way. He was so good in Poor Things. I think he's going to do a lot of stuff. But Rami is like, it's a really beautiful, it's a great show.
Good one. Honestly, good one, both of you. I guess I have two. One is, I don't know if it's the most recent episode or the episode before the most recent episode of Curb. This season's been slow and like not so funny, but there was a recent episode where I think it's the most recent episode that was very funny. Great performance by Vince Vaughn. I love Vince Vaughn.
Oh man.
I mean, just all around, just really, really a classic Curb, like Seinfeld callbacks. Just a great, great episode. I wish I knew what it was called. I'm gonna look it up. My other one is deleting TikTok. Wow. Ooh. That is just brain rot, isn't it? We all know it, but holy shit. It's just like, you want to be constantly entertained and also never entertained? Here you go.
That's real.
So that's, oh, okay. The episode's called Fish Stuck. I thought it was very funny.
Wait, so did you actually deleted TikTok?
I do this thing where I delete it for a few days at a time, and then I'm like,
wow,
it's that bad. And then I put it on my phone, and I'm like, well, yes, it is that bad. And then I
delete. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I need to do that.
It's, I mean, holy, you know, it, you, your brain tricks you into thinking you need to be constantly swiping and constantly watching.
Yeah.
When really you don't. And boy, oh boy, you know, well, not to be all preachy on the mic, but crazy.
Tomorrow it might be banned.
That's you're true.
Right. You're right. It won't.
Right. Maybe someone will do it for me.
Yeah.
That wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't it be nice if they banned TikTok? This was such a good episode, Tyler.
So good.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for tolerating all of my like fun fact drops.
It's nice to have a real academic here. Like, we really have built up a culture of misinformation, inaccuracies, and lies over the past almost 2 years of doing this podcast. And to have someone who is here to not only set the record straight, but add flavor to the record is it really is a little miracle. So thank you
so much. I appreciate that.
We need to have you on again in the future. This was,
please.
You're a true historian.
It's an illness.
If you would like to be found on social media, where can people find you?
I am at Eiffel Tyler, like Eiffel Tower, but Eiffel Tyler, pretty much everywhere, unfortunately.
No, I love a pun, handle.
I got my master's degree in Paris. And so when I was living there, I know that it's so fancy. See? When I was living there, I started this blog to like keep family members kind of aware of what was going on in a way that was not attached to my live journal at the time, which is a handle that's between me and my God. But so I called it Eiffel Tyler, and then that's around the same time that I like started an Instagram, and so now it's my social media handle everywhere. And I had I given that more thought, I might have tried to get something closer to my name, but we're in it now.
I love it.
Thanks.
That's a good choice, Eiffel Tyler. And yeah. I'm sure other people have tried to get it and failed.
And I get tagged once a month in a photo of the Eiffel Tower. So there's that too. So it's a lovely little bonus but on Instagram. I'm like, okay, that's not right, but here I am.
You can follow us on TikTok too.
You can, I guess. Yeah. I'm here. We're doing TikToks on my TikTok.
That you deleted.
You deleted.
Right.
You'll re-download to upload and then
delete it again.
But that's
this is a good indicator that maybe we should get our own separate show, TikTok, now.
That, and we need someone to help us with these TikToks. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah.
But you should still follow at Julia Gray, okay.
Yeah. And you can follow us on Twitter at FK Pigs with a Z, which is just amazing. My Twitter. But
not a lot of brand uniformity across socials.
That's an incredible handle.
It's being scrappy. It's, you know.
Yeah.
We started too late to get any of the good handles. And also Girls Room is,
oh, I'm
I
sure
would say a fairly common combo of words for sure.
Yeah.
Not. Anyway, yeah.
Anyway.
I'm looking it up right now, and it's all naked women. So
I was gonna say, I feel like it's almost definitely just naked women.
Yep. So maybe that's a good idea because we get a lot of followers. Okay, something to think about.
Yeah, we get all the like the bots who are like my pussy and bio, like following us. They're like, we love the pod.
Oh, okay. You know, honestly, I don't know. Good for SEO.
Yeah.
Much to consider. Much for you guys to consider.
Yes.
Thank you, Tyler.
You guys.
All right. How are we? We mix up our sign off every time. Okay. I think, how about this time you just do it?
Okay. XOXO.
Girls' Room.